Good afternoon. You're listening to KFSK News for Tuesday, May 5th. I'm Olivia Rose. A crowd of community members turned out at Petersburg Sandy Beach last Friday to celebrate the retirement of Sergeant Derek Torson. Over a meal of hot dogs and cake, friends, colleagues, and family shared the impact of Torson's nearly 25 years as a police officer in town. KFSK's Taylor Hecker has this audio postcard.
My name is Aaron Morrell. I've known Derek for 30 years since he worked at the Viking Theater downtown. Yeah, he spent some time working at the trading union, and I left town for a decade, and when I came back, he was a police officer.
I'm Susan Omer, and I have known Derek, most of my life, because I remember my first memory of him was how tall and incredible he was when he was taking tickets for the Viking Theater. So I remember him then, and then I also remember being the fortunate person to be on the hiring committee when he was hired as a police officer, and I was so proud to support a local boy. For me, I felt like he had the ability to connect with people and the steadiness that would make him a perfect person, and you know, it's always good to have a mortgage, and then that keeps us here longer too. So
I'm Lenore Rodenberg, and I'm his aunt. It's surreal because it seems like I've always known him as a police officer, and he's able to take the stress out of a situation, and I just admire him so much for that.
Joe Bertignoli. And I've known Derek ever since high school. That's why I worked with him for 20 years within the borough confines. And just had to say that he was a pleasure to work around, you know. And I was just commenting to him about how I've seen him in action with some unfriendly people, you know, unruly, trying to talk him down or whatever. And he had a way of doing that that was kind of, I think, soothing. And his answer to me when I was telling him that, he says, you know, you catch more bees with honey than, and that's the way he operated.
Bob Martin. First met Derek in wrestling. He was a couple years older than me, and I'm grateful he gave me a warning for not stopping on the Singley Alley Bridge 20 years ago, and I just kind of stay out of his way ever since.
My name's Andrew Harris, patrol sergeant with the Petersburg Police Department. Been there just under 8 years. First started with him. He was my first field training officer when I came on in 2018. May or may not have had a few interactions with him prior to becoming a cop. That's a different story. But yeah, he's been my mentor and just been that voice of reason in the department. Always cool, calm, and collective, even in the most stressful situations, you know.
I'm James Kerr. I'm the chief of police now for the Petersburg Police Department. One of the things you'll see today is I have yellow cake and chocolate frosting. Anytime one of us would mess up, or if we did something, Derek would always say, "You owe yellow cake and chocolate frosting." So it became kind of a tradition. If you took keys home, if you did something that he could get yellow cake and chocolate frosting out of, he would always say something like that. So today, I have yellow cake and chocolate frosting. I made four of them.
My name is Derek Torson, and I've been a police officer for almost 25 years. This is surreal for me, first of all, being a police officer for so long, and then realizing I'm not going to be in that role any longer, but then to have so many people appreciate what I've done over the years, it's humbling. I'm going to take it easy for a little while. My wife and I want to do some camping and maybe do some fishing, but other than that, it's see what happens next.
That was an audio postcard from the retirement party for Petersburg Sergeant Derek Torson. U.S. Forest Service personnel have been visiting Southeast Alaska communities to understand how residents want the Tongass National Forest used. The federal agency is doing a comprehensive revision of the Tongass National Forest Plan, which will guide long-term management. They're focusing on tribal, subsistence, recreation, tourism, and timber aspects. Barb Miranda with the Forest Service visited Wrangell last month and gave a brief presentation to community members.
Down in the lower 48, the towns, the wild places are surrounded by civilization. Here, It's the opposite. We have our communities that are surrounded by this wild place that provides us so much for our food, for our subsistence, and for our economies.
Miranda says the plan aims to balance ecological preservation and community needs. Toward the back of the room were activities where people could write down their thoughts and take a survey. Community members highlighted the importance of balancing commercial activities like logging and recreation with subsistence needs. Albert Reinhart is the tribal administrator for the Wrangell Cooperative Association. He just finished an activity that had him identify the greatest subsistence harvest in a certain area of the Tongass.
Subsistence is important to a lot of our smaller communities, rural communities. If we're going to be planning anything, it should be to help those habitats prosper and have our subsistence game be available.
The current comprehensive plan for the Tongass was revised in 1997 and was last amended in 2016. The deadline for Southeast communities to comment ends tomorrow, May 6th. The U.S. Forest Service plans to release a draft of the Environmental Impact Statement in November with a 90-day comment period following. Additionally, they plan to release the final draft of the statement in the summer of 2027 and the final plan in January of 2028. Today, May 5th, is a day of awareness for missing and murdered Indigenous people. For many families, it's a reminder of cases that are still open and may never close, like Tracy Day's case. Day is a Thlinkit woman from Juneau who went missing in 2019. Last year, Day's family requested a death declaration hearing as a way to ask police officers questions about their investigation. But the judge said their questioning wasn't allowed, even though it was allowed for the family of another Alaska Native woman who went missing. KTOO's Yvonne Crumry reports.
Tracy Day went missing in 2019. Ever since, her daughter, Kaylin Schneider, has been using TikTok and other avenues to draw attention to her case.
Imagine your mother disappears with absolutely no trace of what's happened to her, and the police...
Day was Thlinkit, and her disappearance fits a broader pattern of Indigenous women who go missing or are killed at rates far higher than non-Indigenous women. Last year, Schneider petitioned the state to have her mother declared legally dead. For her, this was a chance to prod Juneau police officials publicly about the investigation into Day's disappearance to finally get answers. Here's Schneider during the presumptive death hearing.
I was hoping to ask JPD a few questions. I didn't realize that I wasn't going to get that chance. I had some questions that I felt were important to the case, but...
Judge Peggy McCoy did not allow her to ask them.
Well, this is not about the investigation.
Right,
it's about whether they believe she's still alive.
After the hearing that legally declared her mother dead, Schneider told KTOO in the courthouse she'd spent weeks preparing for the chance to ask officers questions.
We don't care about a death certificate. We just wanted to tell her story in a legal setting and make JPD answer our questions. That's what this was about.
Schneider was not off base to think she'd be allowed to question police officers. She had reason to think this. 1 year earlier, at another presumptive death declaration hearing in Anchorage for a different missing Alaska Native woman, the woman's family was able to question police officers about their investigation. The woman's name was Cassandra Boskovsky. She went missing in Anchorage in 2019, just months after Tracy Day disappeared in Juneau. 5 years later, with prompting by MMIP advocates, Anchorage police connected a photo of a woman found on the phone of serial killer Brian Stephen Smith with Boskovsky's missing persons case. Boskovsky's death declaration was a result of this information, that she was likely killed by Smith. The judge at the Boskovsky hearing allowed the family to interview police officers about the investigation in front of a jury. Here's Judge Brian Clark talking to Boskovsky's cousin, Marcella Boskovsky Grounds, in a recording of the 2024 hearing.
Ms. Boskovsky Grounds, are there any other questions that you think this witness should talk about before we ask the jurors?
Judge Clark also allowed family members to read testimony they prepared and said information the family and advocates brought to the hearing was admissible.
Like I said, this is not an adversarial proceeding. Nobody is going to object to that.
Now, more than a year after the hearing, Boskovsky Grounds said the experience was empowering and intense.
It was relieving in a sense, heart-wrenching. I had all kinds of mixed emotions going on at that time.
She suspects that nationwide media coverage on Brian Stephen Smith was part of the reason the courts gave her family so much power during the hearing. Tracy Day's family, however, wasn't given the same opportunity. Now, nearly a year later, Kaylin Schneider says the hearing is still a painful memory.
I actually stopped talking about it for a while because I was so just deeply traumatized by the situation.
For Schneider, the presumptive death declaration was a Hail Mary, a chance to get JPD to reinvestigate the case.
For a while, I was feeling pretty hopeless about it. It was really hard because I felt like that was our last ditch effort. You know, we had nothing. We had no body, no proof that a crime occurred.
She says it was important to her to ask JPD questions about the investigation into her mother's disappearance in front of a public audience. She saw social media posts by other MMIP advocates who said these hearings were a way to question investigators.
It was like, oh my God, this is genius because it's a legal loophole where we can force them to be in a courtroom answering these questions and they can't just like say no.
Ann Schneider still wants the answers to the questions she prepared to ask JPD at the hearing.
I really just want to know like who they looked into, what evidence they have, and if they plan on doing anything or if they're just going to leave it open and unattended by an investigator.
Juneau police say they will investigate new leads as they come in, and they're reevaluating their procedures for communicating with families of missing people. A spokesperson from the Alaska Department of Law said that aside from brief guidelines, it's up to the judge how witness testimony will be presented in death declaration hearings. In Juneau, I'm Yvonne Cromery.
The Alaska legislature failed to override Governor Mike Dunleavy's veto of a closely watched election reform bill yesterday. The override vote failed by two votes after two Southeast Alaska lawmakers who had previously supported the bill voted no. As Alaska Public Media's Eric Stone reports, backers said they hoped the bill would make it easier to vote and harder to cheat.
Sometimes in the Alaska legislature, just as in life, timing is everything. Timing is what Governor Dunleavy cited in his message to lawmakers announcing his veto. With the November election just 6 months away, he says there just isn't time to implement a system allowing voters to track and correct minor errors on their absentee ballots. The lawmakers who flipped, Sitka Senator Bert Stedman and Ketchikan Representative Jeremy Bynum, both Republicans, say they agree with Dunleavy's assessment. Here's Bynum.
From the time that the bill was passed to the time that the governor actually got it, there was delay. And then when the governor got it, there was delay.
But Senator Bill Willikowski, an Anchorage Democrat, says there was plenty of time to implement the bill. He pointed to the all-male special primary election following the death of Congressman Don Young in 2022.
Just 5-6 weeks later, the governor's Division of Elections announced that ballot tracking would be available by the company Ballot Tracks for the June 11, 2022 election. 6 weeks. They got a ballot tracking system set up in 6 weeks. Just 4 years ago.
One caveat on that, it's the lieutenant governor, not the governor, who heads the Division of Elections. And 4 years later, there's a different lieutenant governor and a different director of the Division of Elections. That new Division of Elections director, though, said in March that implementing a tracking system would be, quote, challenging, not notably that it couldn't be done. And Willikowski says he wishes the administration was up for the challenge.
I'm not prepared to tell Alaskans, sorry, you'll have to wait another year. It's just too hard.
Willikowski and co-sponsor Representative Sarah Vance, a conservative Homer Republican, say they tried to strike a bipartisan balance.
Right now, our system is broken where not every vote is being counted. Our roles have not been tightened up to the level that builds confidence, that ensures people that they have a legal vote.
The bill included prepaid postage on absentee ballots, an elections liaison for rural communities, and better pay for election workers in villages where it's often difficult to find people to staff the polls. And there was a requirement that voters be notified of a data breach, a quicker timeline for reporting results, and provisions aimed at keeping the state's voter rolls correct despite Alaska's transient population. Supporters ranged from the most liberal Democrats to the most conservative Republicans. Big Lake Republican Representative Kevin McCabe, who voted to override the governor, offered an apology.
Not for my vote. I stand by my vote on this bill. I'm apologizing to Alaskans who will bear the cost of this veto.
He apologized to members of the military, people living in rural Alaska, and people in southwest Alaska who were sent the wrong ballots for the 2024 election, among others. Strikingly, neither advocates nor opponents in the legislature claimed the bill would help one party more than another. Timing was the issue. Dunleavy encouraged lawmakers to try again with another bill. Bynum, who flipped from yes to no, said he would vote for a future bill without such a tight timeline. But with just 2.5 weeks to go in the legislative session, that appears unlikely. There just isn't time. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Eric Stone.
For KFSK, I'm Olivia Rose.